Okay, we're beginning here from the Gemara on Tzadik Zayin Amud Bet. Gemara says, based on our Mishnah, Shmat Minei, from that you would conclude, Manali Biyadecha, a person says that you have 100 zuz of mine, V'halo Omer, Eni Yodea, I don't know, Chayav, he is responsible to pay for it. So Leimeid Avit Yufta de Rav Nachman. That should be a problem for the position of Rav Nachman. Ditmar, because we have a machloket amuraim with regards to this matter. Maneli biyadecha, you have 100 zuz of mine, v'halo omer. And the defendant says, eni yodea, I'm uncertain as to whether that is the case or not. V'vhuna v'rav Yehuda amrei chayav. They both say that you are chayav in this case. Seemingly, the reasoning behind their position is bari v'shema. You have a person making a definitive claim, a defendant saying, I don't know, bari v'shema, bari odif, and therefore you are chayav. Rav Nachman and Rabbi Yochanan, amrei patur. Rav Nachman and Rabbi Yochanan both say you are patur, meaning that's the problem that we're facing, because from our Mishnah, you would have concluded otherwise. You would have concluded in a case of bari and shema, that bari odif, because our Mishnah gives instances or cases where the claimant is making a bari claim. The other individual says, Eni yodea, I don't know. And in that case, we said that the bari trumps. So our Mishnah gives examples of where bari, it trumps Shema. Bari is adif. If that's the case, in our situation as well, you would say bari adif. Now again, the cases are not identical because the case in our Mishnah is a case where both parties agree to the terms or circumstances that exist. It's just a question as to what happened to the animal after the terms were already agreed upon. They both agree that he borrowed an animal. They both agree that he rented an animal. The question is, did the animal die while it was rented, or did it die when it was borrowed? So that's a safek in an existing relationship that's already been established and both parties agree. The example of the Gemara is Maleli Biadecha, I lent you money, and the other party says, I don't know. I don't know means you may never have lent me money at all. So the cases are not exactly similar. If you wanted to make the cases exactly similar, it would be a case where he says, Maneli Biadecha, I have 100 zuz with you. The other individual says, yes, you lent me 100 zuz, but any yodeh, I'm chzarti or not. I don't know if I give it back or I didn't give it back. That would be the equivalent case. And over there, even Rav Nachman would agree that you are chayav. So what you have to say, and the Ramban spells this out in more detail, is that the cases are not identical, but the conceptually they're doing the same thing, which is that we have one party making a claim, and the other party saying eni yodea. And his eni yodea revolves around whether he will be chayav or not to be chayav. Even in our Mishnah, when he says eni yodea, yes, he's agreeing to the fact that he borrowed the animal or he rented the animal. But when he says eni yodea, the two outcomes, one outcome will make him patur, which is the case that it was sachur, that it was rented by him. The other case would be make him chayav, which is that it was sha'ul, it was borrowed. And similar over here, when he says eni yodea, one outcome, if it is that he never had the money, would make him patur. The other outcome, if he did have the money, then it would make him chayav. So in a greater sense or a global sense, the cases are parallel. The terms or the exact details of the cases aren't the same. But in general, the genre of the case is the same, which is the eni yodea rests on two possible outcomes. One outcome that would make him patur, and one outcome that will make him chayav. And so that's the question on Rav Nachman, which is, here we have a Mishnah that seemingly says that bari shema is enough to be koveya the halacha that bari odif. So in our case as well, why don't we say the bari and shema, the bari is strong enough to overcome the shema, and therefore bari adif. The other question that you could ask over here is, why is the Mishnah a question of Nachman at all? We're going to see later on in the Gemara, we mentioned in the explanation of the Mishnah yesterday, that the Mishnah clearly follows the position of Sumchus. Sumchus, who believes that mamon hamutal b'safek, whenever you have money that is left in an uncertain circumstance, chokim, you split it. The Rabbanon disagree with him and say, motzi michabero alav haraya, that when you take something from another party, you have to be, or bring evidence to the fact that you're removing it from its chazakah, from its place of residence right now. So the Chachamim disagree with this Mishnah, or disagree with this position of Sumchus. And all Rav Nachman needs to say is, I don't hold like Sumchus, I hold like the Rabbanan. So why is the Mishnah a question on him, or why is Sumchus a question on Rav Nachman? Rav Nachman will just simply say, I don't subscribe to the position of Sumchus. And the question would be equally applicable to Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda as well, because Rav Yehuda in other locations makes it clear that he thinks HaMotzi Michaveiro Alavaraya trumps Borei Vishema. And over here, that should be the same in the circumstances of our Mishnah. Why do we say that Bari Odif over here, if generally HaMotzi Michaveiro Alavaraya, meaning that he thinks that Sumchus's position is incorrect and the Rabbanan are correct. And so therefore, how does he then explain our Mishnah? So Tosfot over here asks the question and says, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Zo Divrei Simchus, V'chamim Omrim, Ze Klal Gadol, B'din HaMotzi Chavero Lavaraya, Mai Klal Gadol, Fiyo Nizak Omer Bari, Mazik Omer Shema. It doesn't matter. Bari and Shema are irrelevant in the face of HaMotzi Michavero Lavaraya. V'od, in addition to that, the Hocha, B'mane Levi Yadecha, Deleka Dvarura De Mamona, Lo Polik Simchus. So in addition to that, you have a problem which comes back to the early part of the Masechta on Daf Bet Amud Bet. Over there, the Gemara brings the position of Sumchus and then states that Sumchus might only say his position or have his position in a case of Drorra de Mamona. In a case, there it's a Machloket Rashi and Tosafot as to what Drorra de Mamona means. Rashi thinks Drorra de Mamona means Chisaron Kesef, that there'll be a loss incurred. Tosfot says that Drorra de Mamona means that the Safek exists without the claimants. That even without the claimants, we'd have the same question, the same problem. Over here, where there is no Drorra de Mamona, we're not talking about a loss from a decision about to whom does the object belong, or for the Balei Tosfot, the Safek doesn't exist without the claimants, because there's no reason to believe that someone owes someone else money unless the claim comes along. Even Sumchus agrees to the position of the Chachamim that HaMotzi Michaveiro Alav Araya. So if that is the case, then even Sumchus in this case subscribes to the position of the Chachamim, and that's why it would be a question of Rav Nachman, because despite the fact that here Sumchus believes HaMotzi Michaveiro Alav Araya, he's still saying Bari Vishema, Bari Odif in these circumstances, which would undermine Rav Nachman's position. Beish Lamar, the Davka Hacha Eat Leid Rav Yudei De Bari Odif. Davi Bari Tov Vishema Garua. What you have to say here is that only in this circumstance does Rav Yehuda believe that Bari Vishema Bari Odif. Aval Gabi Nizak Avi Bari Garua. The Fishio Dea Shemazik Lo Yasham Voyechishenu. Toin Bari. Ba'asha Shemazik Nami Tov Hu Shloya Lo Yeda. In the case of the damage or the case of the animal where there's a tremendous amount of uncertainty, then the Bari is weaker because the individual wouldn't know. He wasn't there. The owner of the animal that was injured wasn't there. And when he makes a definitive claim, there's suspicion about his claim because how does he know? On the other hand, the individual who says Shema, the person who is the defendant in that case, when he says Shema, that's a good claim because he wasn't there either and he has no idea what happened. And so his Shema is a valid Shema. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda over there would agree that Bari Vishema, Bari Enu Adif. Our case over here, where the two parties should know, meaning that the lender should know and the borrower should know, over there the Bari and Shema take on a different approach. The Bari is a strong Bari, and the Shema is a weak Shema, because he should have known the information. So therefore over here he says Bari Adif. So for that reason, the Balei Tosafot point out that first of all, Rabbi Yehuda says over here, Bari Vishema, Bari Adif, that is not a global statement about Bari and Shema. Depends on the nature of the Bari and the Shema. Over here, the nature of the Bari and the Shema make it that the Bari makes sense, and the Shema is a weak Shema. Therefore, the Bari trumps the Shema. In a case where the Bari is suspect, and the Shema is a good claim, then we will not say Bari v'Shema, Bari Adif. And therefore, Rav Yehuda can agree to the position of the Chachamim, of HaMotzi Mechavero La Baraya, which overrides Bari and Shema, because it only overrides Bari Vishema in situations or circumstances where the Bari is weak and the Shema is strong. And similar over here, even though Sumchus in general disagrees with the Chachamim about Mamona Mutabla Safek, over here where there is no Drorra de Mamona, he agrees that our case in the Mishnah is a Motzi Mechavero Alav Araya. Despite that fact, we say that Bari trumps. Again, that will be because of the fact that the Bari over here, a strong Bari, and the Shema is a weak Shema. So that's one thing. Number two is, why doesn't Rav Nachman just simply say, I hold like the Chachamim of Amotzimi Chabero Olavareya? Then Tosfot again says, because Modus Sumchos Hekad Aleka Dorada de Mamona, the Motzi Vim Chabero Olavareya, Vishlomo. The Sumchos did lay Mamona Mutavus Vek Chokim Aviki Ilu Tarvayu Mukhzakim Bo. Says that even Sumchos here, who thinks that Amona Mutavus Vek is Chokim, that's because he thinks both parties are Mukhzak. That both parties have a chazaka on the item. If that's the case, according to the Chachamim, so then the Bari should trump the Shema, that at least you should say over here, Yachloku. That at least you should say that they should split it. There's enough of a chazaka over here that the Bari with together with the chazaka should make it that they should be Yachloku. So Tosfot says, even though the Mishnah is according to Sumchus, Sumchus's position within the Mishnah should influence the Chachamim's position. So even though Simchus says that Mamonu Mutav Safek is Chokim, and Bari and Shema Bari Odif, at least for the Chachamim, the fact that Simchus says that both parties have a Chazaka over here, in the case of Bari and Shema, that should be enough to make it that the Chachamim should agree that you should split it, because there's no Motzi Mechaveri Olav Areya, since both parties are Mukzak in it. And for that reason, the question still remains on Rav Nachman, because even if you explain the Mishnah according to the Chachamim, the position of the Chachamim in the Mishnah would not be Patur, like Rav Nachman. It would be Chokim. And so for that reason, it's still a question, Rav Nachman, even if he says, the Mishnah Sumchos and I hold, like the Chachamim. So Gemara answers, Kedamer Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman will solve the problem here, like he did in other places, which is, Kgon Sheis Esek Shvua Bineem. There is another shvua that is being prompted in the case, and that other shvua is what's driving the outcomes in these situations. Hachanami, so too in our case of the Mishnah, Kegon Sheish Esek Shvua B'neem. Heichi Domi Esek Shvua. What is the situation, the circumstance in which Esek Shvua applies? Esek Shvua is something that we discussed again yesterday in the Mishnah, which is that the Mishnah is very strange, and this is what leads to the large balei Tosafot on the previous amud, which is why in our Mishnah is there no Shvuat HaShomrim, which is that the Shvuat HaShomrim would mean that I have a Shvua that already exists that the Shomer has to take. Once he's taken that Shvua, I can pile on other Shvuot because of Gilgul Shvua. So that would be the easiest way to explain our Mishnah, which nobody does. The Gemara later on will explain one case in the Mishnah in that way. The problem is, why doesn't it explain the remainder of the cases in that manner that there's Shvuat HaShomrim? So yesterday we spoke about all the different opinions within the Rishonim as to why that's not true, whether it's because you can't do Gilgul Shvua when the claim is only a Shema claim, maybe when the person responds Shema, that's enough of a response that you can't obligate them because of Gilgul Shvua, or the Balei Tosafot, who had the strongest answer that covered all the cases, the case where the other party believes him. As far as the animal dying, so there's no Shvuat HaShomrim. So along comes Rav Nachman and says that the case here, as well as the case by Maneh Libi Adecha, the case where he'll be Chayav is if there's an Esek Shvua. Esek Shvua means that there's another reason for prompting a Shvua over there. Just the fact that you make a claim and say, Maneh Libi Adecha, you owe me 100, the other guy says, I don't know, that's not sufficient grounds to generate a Shvua, according to Rav Nachman. What Rav Nachman says is the situation has to be a case where there's another reason, something else prompting a Shvua, and then once you have that Shvua, you can roll on to him the other aspect of the Shvua. And the Gemara now is going to say, Hey Chidami, what is this Esek Shvua according to Rava? Dama Rava, Maneh Libi Adecha, he says, Yomi 100, V'alo Omer, In the Chabiyadi El Chamishim. He responds and says, I only have 50 of yours. That's what otherwise known as Modeh B'Miktzat. And we know Modeh B'Miktzat generates a Shvua min HaTorah. V'Hashar, the remainder, Eini Yodeya, I don't know about the rest. Mitoch She'enu Yachol Lishava Mishalein. Since he can't take the Shvua over here, he will have to pay. Because as far as the 50 is concerned, the 50 is a Modeh B'Miktzat. On that, he'll have to take a Shvua, because the Torah tells us, Ki Huzeh, by the Pasuk in the Parshiyot HaShmumrim that says, Ki Huzeh, we learned that there's a din of Modeh B'Miktzat. So Modeh B'Miktzat obligates you in a Shvua. So now the Shvua would be, I really don't owe you the other 50. The problem is that's not what he can say. The Shvua of Modeh B'Miktzat would say, I owe you 50, I don't owe you the other 50. The problem is for the guy, the other 50, he just doesn't know what the story is. So So when he goes to take the shvuah, he's going to take a shvuah. Yes, I owe you 50, and I don't know about the other 50. That's not a shvuah. So since he can't take the shvuah anymore, because he can't deny the other 50, he's going to have to pay. And that's a case, according to Rav Nachman, where you're going to be chayav in the situation of maneh li biyadecha. Similarly, in our Mishnah, you would have to simulate a similar situation, which is you have to create a situation or a circumstance of modeh b'miktzat. And that's what the Gemara says here, mishkachad la reisha bebet v'seifa begimel, that the reisha case will be with two animals, and the seifa case will be with three animals. Remember from the Mishnah, the first case is dealt with the days, meaning that either half a day was borrowed, half a day was rented, or that it was rented for one day, borrowed for the other day, so on and so forth. The latter part of the Mishnah says he gave him two animals, one he lent to him and one he rented to him. So in the latter case of the Mishnah, there's already two animals involved. So in the ratio where there's only one animal, you'll have to add in another animal to generate this esek shvuah. And the latter part of the Mishnah where there's already two animals, you have to add in another animal, make it three animals. The Gemara explains, ratio bebet, the ratio is a case with two animals. Damale shtei parot mesarti lecha. He says, I gave you two animals. Palge diyoma b'sheila upalge diyoma b'schirut. Half the day they were lent to you, and half the day they were rented to you. Inami chad yoma b'sheila v'chad yoma b'schirut. Or, I rented them to you for one day, and I lent them to you for another day. The claimant says here, the lender says here, meitu tarvayu bidan sheila. They both died at the time that it was borrowed. Obviously, that's to his benefit, because if they died meita kedarka for Shoel, he is chayav. So he says they both died when you were borrowing them, not when you were renting them, and you now owe me two animals back. Vamarle Shoel, and the Shoel responds to him and says, chada in, one of them you're right, bidan shela meita. I know for certain it died while I was borrowing it, and I owe you that money. That is a modeh b'miktzat. Ve'idach, the other one, lo yadana. I don't know, ibidan shela meita, ibidan schirut meita. I don't know if it died while I was borrowing it, or it died while I was renting it. So again, here, you have a modem miksad, he's gonna have to take a shvuah. The nature of the shvuah is, one of them died while it was borrowed, the other one did not die when it was borrowed. In the end, what ends up happening is he can't say that, because he says, eni yodeya about the second animal. And therefore, since he can't take the shvuah, he pays for it. So that is the difference between the Bari and Shema over here. Why does the Bari and Shema obligate the individual over here? It's not because the Bari is Adif, and that would disprove Rav Nachman's position with regards to Maneh li biyadecha. Rather, the situation here is that the Bari and Shema are in the context of a modeh b'miktzat situation already. Since there's an esek shvuah, since there's already an obligation of a shvuah because of modeh b'miktzat, any yodeya causes a problem. And that any yodeya makes it that he can't respond to the shvuah that he has to take because of the modeh b'miktzat, and that's what makes him chayav. And that's why the Mishnah says that if the claimant makes a definitive claim and the defendant says shema, then in that case chayav. The reason he is chayav is because he was already chayav a shvuah from modeh b'miktzat. Now that he's chayav shvuah v'midot miksat, he can't take the shvuah because of this any yodeya. And that's what makes him chayav. The seifa, the latter half of the Mishnah is begimel. There are three animals there. Damalei shalosh parot netati lecha. I lent you, or I gave you to borrow or rented to you three animals. Bet b'sheila v'achat b'schirut. Two of them were lent to you, one of them was rented to you. Meituani tarti d'sheila. Two of them died, and he says, both of those were animals that I lent to you. Vamarle Shoel, and the borrower says, in, chada shela meita, one of them that was borrowed died. By definition, that would be the case if two of them died. So he agrees that one of them that was of shela died. Idach, lo yadana. But the other one, I don't know, either shela meita, utakaima schiruti, or I don't know if the one that was borrowed died, and the rented one is still alive. It is chirut meito, or is it the rented one that died? V'ad kaima de shela, and the one that's still alive is the borrowed one. Umitoch shein yochol lishava mishalem. Once again, here is a modeh b'miktzat. He agrees that one of the animals at least died b'sheila, so that's modeh b'miktzat. He needs to take a shvuah for the modeh b'miktzat, despite the fact he can't take it because he's saying any odeya on the other two. Since he can't take it, he has to pay for it. And that's why in that circumstance, again, if there's a Bari and Shema claim, you are Chayav. Not because the Bari is Adif, but because the Shema causes a problem because of a pre-existing condition. Pre-existing condition is Modeh B'Miksat. And so there's an extra animal in each case to generate a Modeh B'Miksat, but a Modeh B'Miksat which he can't take a Shvua for. And that's why he is Chayav according to Rav Nachman, because Esek Shvua B'Nehem. They already have an existing Shvua of Modeh B'Miksat. So obviously the Mishnah only mentions one animal in the Reisha and two animals in the Seifa, and now we're saying, well, it's two animals in the Reisha and three in the Seifa. So what you have to say is that the Mishnah only discussed the animals that were in conflict or that were problematic. The one where he agreed, the Mishnah doesn't mention because that is not relevant. Of course, then he definitely owes the money because of the fact that he agrees to that amount. But it doesn't tell you, which is important, is the fact that it's also Modeh B'Miksat in that case, and that's what generates the Shvua or the Chiyuv over here. And that's the way that Rav Nachman will explain our Mishnah in order that the Mishnah will not be in contradiction to his position. Tosfot points out over here that this idea where a person is obligated to take a Shvua and he says any Yodeya that he has to pay because he can't take the Shvua, Tosfot points this out, we've mentioned it in other places in Shas. He says, someone who's suspect of lying under oath, he cannot take a shvua. So now, that means that if you go make a claim against someone who is suspect of taking false shvuot, he can't take a shvua because we don't trust him anymore to take a shvua. Since he can't take a shvua, he should have to pay. Tosfot says we don't allow that to happen because that will spur claims against this individual. Because if you know someone is chashud al shvua, you'll lend him money, say you'll lend him a pruta, and then he go back to court and you'll say, I lent him 1,000 prutot, I lent him millions of dollars. And then the guy comes along and says, no, you only lent me a pruta, which is the truth. But he will be classified as a modeh b'miktzat, and he would have to take a shvua. But he can't take a shvua because he is chashud al shvua. And if you say then that a chashud al shvua mitoch sheinu yichol lishava mishalem, then what people are going to do is trump up claims against him because they know that he can't respond with a shvua. Since he can't respond with a shvua, they're going to drain him of all of his assets. So over there, the chachamim are mitakein that when he can't take a shvua, we flip it to the other party. We flip it to the other side and we force the claimant to take the shvua. Because otherwise you have an untenable situation in which people can make claims against him and he has no defense whatsoever. And then the person is completely at risk. So in order to avoid that, we flip the shvua to the claimant in that case. But in our situation where there is no such chashad involved here, the person didn't have to be modeh b'miksat, he didn't have to say shema. In that case, when he doesn't take the shvua, he will be obligated to pay. Because over here, it's not because he's chashud that he's not taking the shvua, but simply because the circumstances lead him to a position where he can't take the shvua, denying the other claim. Because of the fact that he says, eini yodeya. He just doesn't know the information that prevents him from being able to take the shvua. Tosfos make two other notes about this idea of, mitoch sheinu chol lishava tzarich lishalem, that since he doesn't know, he has to pay. One of which is that in a case where shnehem chashudim ha-shvua, where they're both chashud ha-shvua, so therefore neither party can take the shvua, over there Rav Nachman will agree shechokim. They split it. Since both parties here are problematic, therefore you would say that they should be chokim. The truth is it's dafa b'chashud ha-mechuyav shvua d'oraita. It's only true where each party is chayav e-shvua d'oraita. But by Shvua de Rabbanan, when it's only a rabbinic Shvua, we don't say, mitoch sheinu chol lishava, tzarich lishalem. So this is the view of the Rabbeinu Tam, that this idea of mitoch sheinu chol lishava, mishalem, is number one, true only in Shvuot de Oraita, only on Torah level Shvuot, if you can't take the Shvua, are you obligated to pay? Rabbinic level Shvuot will not obligate you. That's number one. Number two is, we have both parties that are problematic, shneim chashudim ala Shvua, and they're both obligated as Shvua d'oraita, and over there in that case you're going to be chokim, since both parties in a sense are guilty for the situation, that mitoch sheinu yachol lishava. In the other hand, in the case where, like we just talked about, a chashud al shvua, where we flip it to the other party, we said that the original shvua might be a shvua d'oraita, and only mid rabbanan do we flip it to the other party to prevent people from trumping up claims against the person who is chashud al shvua. So that would mean that the first shvua is a din d'oraita, and the second shvua is a din de rabbanan. In that situation, the Rabbeinu Tam says that the chashud al shvua d'oraita then has to pay, because he can't take a shvua, because he was chayav a shvua d'oraita and he can't take it. The other party where we flip the shvua to him, since it's only a flipping of a shvua d'rabbanan, he's not obligated to pay because that's only a shvua d'rabbanan. And since he can't take it, it doesn't obligate him to pay. That's the way the Rabbeinu Tam explains it. Okay, and therefore the Rabbeinu Tam now has to explain why in that case does Rav Nachman believe that when you have a shvua d'oraita on one side and a shvua d'rabbanan on the other side, which is you have shneim chashudim, Rav Nachman paskins chokim and does not say that the chashud ha-shvua pays. So he says over here, "Va'ad shneim chashudim afgav shkenegdoinu mukhiyav al shvua derabanan afilu achi mafsid einu mishum shashvua ba machmata nitva sheyachayav shvua d'oraita." Because the origins of the shvua are an eidin d'oraita, and therefore when we flip the shvua over to the other party, it's as if the shvua is d'oraita, a continuation of that shvua d'oraita. L'chein chashiva gam betoveya ki d'oraita, v'einu ni'ra d'ri. The Ri does not agree with the Rabbeinu Tam's conclusion over here, either because he thinks that if you follow through the Gemara or the flow of the Gemara there, that which Rabbeinu Tam assigns to the position of Nachman is not as obvious or a direct outcome of the Shaklavatari of the Gemara. Or even if you want to say like the Rabbeinu Tam, you'd have to argue that both the Tove and Nidva in that case were Chayav Shvot Mida Oraita. And since they're Chayavim Shvot Oraita, since both of them can't take it, then they are Chulkim. But not the fact that when one of them is Chayav Shvot Oraita, and then the Gilgul Mida Rabbanan generates a second Shvua, that takes on a status of a Shvot Oraita because it derived from the original shvua, because it's flipping the original shvua onto the nidva, onto the defendant. Therefore, they're both considered as if they couldn't take a shvua and have to pay. The Ri is not willing to accept that position, the Rabbeinu Tam, that they both become like a shvua d'oraita, and that's why they would be chokim over there. All right, so now the Gemara continues and says, Ula Rami Bar Chama, Rami Bar Chama we bumped into in Baba Kama, and Rami Bar Chama and Baba Kama told us that the kihu zeh that is found in Parshat Shomrim is not what we call eruv parshiot kan. It is not a mixture of parshiot over here, but rather it is an obligation of the Shvuat Shomrim. And what Rami Bar Chama in essence says is that in order for the Shvuat Shomrim to be true, you need modeh b'miksat. A shomer will not be chayav a shvua, aleim kain, he has a modeh b'miksat involved in that situation. So the Gemara says, "The Rami Bar Chama Damar Dalit Shomrim Tzrichim Kfira B'Miksat V'Hoda B'Miksat." Even a Shomer who requires Shvat, we could have said that Shvat the Shomrim derives from the fact that Nansu makes the claim that they were taken or they died in a manner that was out of his control, and then we would say he has to take a Shvat the Shomrim for that. That is the belief of Rabbi Chiya Bar Yosef. So going to Rabbi Chiya Bar Yosef, we already explained the Gemara before that a Shomer is Chayav independent of Modeh B'Miksat. And therefore, when we said over there Modeh B'Miksat is a totally independent Shvua from that of the Shvuat HaShomrim. And therefore, in the case before, when he is Modeh B'Miksat, he's Modeh on portion of it, and the other party is not Kofer, he only says Shema, that's enough to obligate him a Shvua just Mitzat that he is a Shomer. The Shomer is making a claim over here, and now he should have to take a shvua. But the modeh b'miksat is independent of having a kfira, a denial. Now, on the other hand, what you have here by Rami Bar Chama is that in order to be chayav as a shomer and a shvua, not only do I need you to say nansu or something happened that would make me patur, I need you to be modeh b'miksat, kofer b'miksat, I need you to admit a part of it, deny a part of it, and then have a separate issue with regards to being a shomer. What that does, both in the Gemara and Baba Kama, as well as over here, is adds another animal to this situation. Because I need to come up with a scenario where I have multiple issues at hand. That's what the Gemara says. Ulrami dar chama damar dal shurim tzrichim kfira b'miksat v'oda b'miksat, mishkachala reisha b'gimel v'seifa b'dalet. Then the first cases, or the early cases of our Mishnah, you'll need three animals. In the latter case of our Mishnah, you will need four animals. Reisha b'gimel, in the earlier case of the Mishnah, you'll need three animals. Darmalei gimel parot shalosh parot netati lecha. I gave you three animals. Palge de yoma b'sheila, palge yoma de b'schirot. They were half day lent to you and half day rented to you. Inam ichad yoma b'sheila v'chad yoma b'schirot. Or one day they were lent to you, one day they were rented to you. Umeitil gimel kulu b'idan sheila. And they all died at the time of sheila. As Rashi noted before, he actually mentions this in the Gemara before, but it's also true over here, the reason that they say all three of them died, or in the previous case where we explained Rabbi Chiya Bar Yosef's position, we said two of them died, is because if he says that one of them is alive, the one of them that he admits that he owes him is alive, then he could do Halach. He could just hand it back. If you remember earlier in the Masechta, we had a machloket as to whether Halach overcomes the problem of Modem Miksat. The guy makes a claim for 100, and he says, yes, I owe you 50, and he hands it. Here are the 50, and he says, Halach, we had a machloket as to where Halach still remains a problem of Modem Miksat, or doesn't remain a problem of Modem Miksat, and there's no Modem Miksat there where you hand him the money back immediately. And you say, Halach, this is yours, take it. Says Rashi notes over here, by saying that they all died, you can't do Halach anymore. Because you can't hand him back the money. You can't hand him back the object because the object is dead. So that avoids that machloket by saying all of them died, and so there's no halach over here. But Amalei Shuel, the Shuel responds to him and says, Chada lo yu dvari meolam. One of them never happened at all. I didn't even borrow that animal. Chada in bidad shela meta. One of them, you are correct, it died at the time of when I was borrowing it. Bidach lo yadana. And the third one, bidan shela meta, bidan schirut meta. Whether it died at the time of the borrowing or the time of the renting. Over there, since he can't take the Shua, he has to pay. So what it did was, you generated now, Modeh b'miksat, where you agreed that one of the animals did die at the right time. Kofer b'miksat, because he says one of the animals never happened, I didn't even borrow it from you, that's a kfirah. And then the third Shua would be your Shua to Shomrim, which he says is, I don't know what happened during that time. Now, he would either have to then say it was during Schirut or during Sheila, and he would have to take a Shvuah, since he was Modeh b'miksat, he would have to take Shvuah to Shomrim about that final animal, but now he can't take it because he says, Eni Yodeya. Since he says Eni Yodeya, Tzarich L'Shalem, and that would be the explanation of the Mishnah for Rav Nachman, Aliba Derami Bar Chama, who says that Shvuah to Shomrim requires Modeh b'miksat and Kfirah b'miksat. What you do see from here, by the way, is that it's not sufficient to have a modeh b'miksat and a ne'entzu, let's say, for Rami Bar Chama. If you were to say one of them, yes, you're right, died, or I was poshea by it, and I'm responsible for it. The other one was ne'anas, was taken against my will, was unforeseen circumstances. That's not enough to be determined a kfira. Because if that was the case, then even according to Rami Bar Chama, you could explain it with two animals. Because you say he admits to one animal, and he says the other one was ne'anas. And then you have your modeh b'miksat, kfira b'miksat, and then he has to take a shvua about that kfira b'miksat of ne'ansu. But the answer is that doesn't work. For Rami Bar Chama, modeh b'miksat and kfira b'miksat literally means a denial. A complete denial here, not saying that I had it, but it did something that makes me patur. No, kfira means a denial of the claim completely. And you see that from the way the Gemara set it up over here. Otherwise, the Gemara could have set up with two animals instead of with three animals. Seifa b'dalet. And then the latter case in the Mishnah will be b'dalet, the case where he says he lent him two animals. So over there, dalet parot natati lecha. I gave you four animals. Gimo b'sheila. Three of them I lent to you. Chada b'schut. And one of them I rented to you. Umeitu ana gimo b'sheila. And the three that I lent to you died. V'amalei shoel. The borrower says, Chada lo yadu v'dvarei me'olam. One of them never happened. So that's the denial. That's your kfira. Chada in d'sheila meita. One of them, you're right, was a sheila that died. That's the modeh b'miksat. V'idach. Now this is the one he would have to take the shvuah to shomrim on if he said nensu, but lo yadana. I don't know. So e d'schirut meita v'kaima d'sheila. Whether the one that I rented died and the one that's alive is the borrowed one. Oh, the Sheila Meitor, the one that I borrowed died, the Kaima the Schirot. And the one that's still alive is the rented one. Mitoch Sheni Yochol Yishava, Mishalem. Since he can't take the Shvua, he has to pay over here. So according to Rami Bar Chama, you'll need an additional animal in the mix to generate the Kfira of a Miksat, which is the denial. And that's the denial by saying, Lo Yud Barim Meolam. So that's what adds in an additional animal to get to Rav Nachman's Isek Shvuah in our Mishnah as to why you are Chayam in our Mishnah, even though Rav Nachman normally holds that Bari and Shema is not enough to make you Chayam, because we say Amotzi Mechavero, Lavareya, trumps. So in this case of our Mishnah, you would have to say that there's something else generating the Shvuah. What is that something else? According to Rav Chiya bar Yosef, it's simply the Moda B'mitzat. The fact that you admitted to a portion to it, that makes you Chayav. Therefore, I only need one additional animal to explain the Mishnah, according to Rav Nachman. According to Rami bar Chama, where you need a Moda B'mitzat and a Kfir B'mitzat, you'll have to add two animals to the Mishnah in order to generate the Moda B'mitzat, the Kfir B'mitzat that generates the Shvuah, or the Esek Shvuah B'nehem, that makes it that by the case of Bari Modif, where he can't take the Shvuah because he said Shema, then in that situation he's going to be Chayav. Since he can't take the Shvuah, he is Chayav to make compensation for that. Now this does also relate back to a machloket between Rashi, the Rabbeinu Tam, and the Riva, back in the Gemara in Bava Kama, as well as earlier in Bava Metzia, as to why, by the cases of Kofer Bakol, in a complete denial case, is the individual believed. So the Gemara back in Bava Kama, where we have a machlok between Rashi, the Rabbeinu Tam, and the Riva, as to explain the Gemara Gan Kuf Zayin Amud Aleph, over there the Gemara makes a distinction with regards to Kofer Bakol and Moda B'mitzat with regards to a milveh versus a pikadon. Rashi explains that difference deriving from the fact that by a milveh, the loveh was subject to the goodness of the malveh, of the lender over there, and therefore in some ways he's indebted to the lender, and if he goes ahead and then denies the whole claim, that is, in adam is panav bifnei bal chuvo, a person does not deny a claim where someone has done something generous or nice towards him. On the other hand, when it comes to a pikadon, where the shomer is providing a service or do something on behalf of the depositor, then in that case, he's not doing him any tova, the depositor, and therefore the shomer has no qualms about lying to him, or meiz panav by kofer akol. And that's why Rashi over there says that kofer bakol is a tour by milveh, Moda B'mitzat would be Chayav for the reasons why he is afraid to be Kofer Bakol. But in the cases of Pikadon, Kofer Bakol, Me'iz U'Me'iz, he definitely would be Me'iz Panav by the case of Pikadon because he has no reason not to lie about that. And therefore, Kofer Bakol is not a Ptur by the case of Pikadon. The Rabbeinu Tam and the Riva both argue on Rashi over there, saying that that doesn't make so much sense because we find cases in which by pikadon, a kofer bakol is patur. And so therefore, how could you claim that kofer bakol has no application by a shomer and only has application by a milveh? The Riva has an answer there in Kuf Zayin, which the Baal Yetzirah favor in the end because it fits into our Gemara here in Bava Metzia as well as many other Gemarot in an easier fashion. That is that the Riva says that it's not a differentiation between milveh and pikadon, but rather claims that are relevant by milveh have one din, and claims that are relevant by shomer have a different din. And that has to do with the fact as to whether the claimant over here has knowledge, or enough knowledge to know if the other party is lying. So in the case of a lender, when he lends money to the borrower, when the borrower comes and denies the claim, the lender knows he's lying because of the fact that he lent him the money. And therefore, the borrower would be afraid, or in me'iz panav b'fnei bal chovo, he would not be so brazen as to deny the claim when in the other party knows that he is lying. That can be simulated in a case of shomer, in a case where a person says, I deposited the item with you, and the other party says, no, you did not deposit it with me. Lo ayu dvarim mi'olam. That would also be a case of kofer bakol, where we would believe him because ein adam me'iz panav b'fnei bal chovo. Because over here, the depositor knows the truth. He knows that he deposited with him, and therefore the denial is a hazat panim, is a brazen denial, and a person won't do that psychologically face to face with the claimant when he knows the truth is otherwise, or when he knows that the claimant knows that the truth is otherwise. And therefore you can have cases of kofer bakol where you are patur from a shvuah even in shomrim. But in a case where he makes a claim of nansu, that there was something that happened to the animal that was unforeseen or uncontrollable, and that's why he is patur, over there the depositor has no idea. He has no information. He knows he lent it to him. The other, he knows he deposited with him. The shomer agrees to that fact. But now he says something happened to the animal while it was under his auspices that the Baalim have no idea about. And there, kofer bakol would not be a sufficient denial because it's not so brazen in that case. The other party doesn't know. And so you might lie because the other party just doesn't know the truth. And so that's not an indication of the fact that you're telling the truth. And that's where Shvuat HaShomrim will kick in and you'll have to take a Shvuah. And that becomes apparent on the Amud Bet here that we are going to say that there is a Shvuat HaShomrim for Nansu. When he says Meta Kedarka, you can generate a necessity to take a Shvuah. Rabbeinu Tam, on the other hand, says that when the Gemara says Ki Huzeh is Iruv Parshiot, meaning that Ki Huzeh refers to Modeh Mimiksa by cases of Milveh, it doesn't mean, like Rashi says, it only applies to cases of modiv and mixad by milviv, but it does not apply to shomrim whatsoever. That's why Rashi and the Riva learn. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Tam says that when it says kiuzeh, means it does not only relate to parshat shomrim, it also relates to milveh. Meaning that modiv and mixad is the vehicle by which you're going to be chayav by milveh, but it's also a necessary ingredient for you to be chayav in the case of shomrim. And he actually uses our Gemara here. Our Gemara here who brings the position of Rami Bar Chama, and that implies that the position beforehand was that of Rabbi Chiya Bar Yosef. And Rabbi Chiya Bar Yosef is the position that the Gemara is explicating on in Bava Kama and Kuf Zayin Amud Aleph. And therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam says that even Rabbi Chiya Bar Yosef agrees, in order to be chayav in Shvuat HaShomrim, you need a modeh b'miksat. What you don't need is a kfira b'miksat. You need modeh b'miksat without kfira b'miksat in order to be chayav Shvuat HaShomrim. On the other hand, Rami Bar Chama says not only do you need modeh b'miksat, you also need kfira b'miksat. But Rabbeinu Tam says that modeh b'miksat is a necessary ingredient for you to be chayav Shvuat HaShomrim. And so therefore, he uses our Gemara as the basis for his position. That's how he explains the Gemara back in Baba Kama. That's why Kerber Kol is considered to be Patur, because it's Gzera da Katuv. Gzera da Katuv says that modeh b'miksat is chayav, and that's true by the Shomrim, as well as by Milveh. Kofer Bakol is Patur, and that's Gzera da Katuv. And therefore, there's no distinction between Milveh and Pikadon. In both cases, Kofer Bakol would be Patur because of this Gzera da Katuv. Because according to Rabbeinu Tam, modeh b'miksat is a necessary ingredient both by Milveh as well as by the Shvuat HaShomrim in order to be chayav. And so therefore the Kofer HaKol is Patur. And then he eliminates from the Girsa Baba Kama that by Pikadon Meizu Meiz, that by Pikadon he would be brazen, and therefore he's not believed. The Rabbeinu Tam eliminates it from the Girsa because it would be a problem for his Shita. Now for the Rabbeinu Tam, we can understand the Gemara's going through here and adding in all of these animals in order to have this situation explain an Esek Shua according to Rav Nachman. According to the other Rishonim who say that you don't need modeh b'miksat to generate Shvuat HaShomrim, we already discussed why there is no Shvuat HaShomrim over here, but even so, you could have explained the Gemara in an alternative manner. And therefore the Ramban and the Rashba say that our whole Gemara here is not Me'ikar Dina Gemara, but rather from Rabbi Yehudai Gaon, who brought down this explanation according to these positions. But that is not the only way that you could explain our Mishnah. For the Rabbeinu Tam, it makes sense that this is the way to explain the Mishnah, because you need modeh b'miksat as a part and parcel to generate Shvuat HaShomrim. But for other Rishonim who do not believe that, then this Gemara should not be the only solution to our Mishnah, and therefore they don't see this as being an Ikar part of the Gemara, but rather an addition of the Gonim at a later time. But the Rabbeinu Tam's biggest challenge comes from a Gemara in Baba Batra, as well as the Gemara on the second half of today's daf, who suggests that you could have Shvuat HaShomrim even without modeh b'miksat. We're going to see that upcoming, that the Gemara is going to say through a Gilgul Shvua of the necessity of the Shomer to take a Shvua by the case where he says Meta Kedarka. That Shvua would then generate a Gilgul Shvua to say that it was either the Shchura or the Sheila that died. But why is there Shvuat HaShomrim over here? There is no modeh b'miksat. And clearly the Gemara's question there is not a Liba de Rav Nachman, because Rav Nachman already established that the only reason you're Chayav in a Mishnah for a Shvua, because there's Esek Shvua B'nehem. That's what generates the Shvua, is the other information, the other item that generated the Shvua. But for Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda, that's not necessary. And the Gemara's question there is according to Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda, and therefore it's clearly not a case of modeh b'miksat. So how does Rabbeinu Tam deal with that, as well as the Gemara in Baba Batra that presents the same type of problem? He answers that there was an early Takanah Derabanan in those cases that you have to take a Shvat HaShomrim by Nansu. Before the Shvat HaSeitz came into being, which is a very late Shvuah, and Rashi himself says on our Mishnah that you're only patur according to Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda because Shvat HaSeitz was not in place. But once Shvat HaSeitz came into place, you would be chayab to take the Shvat HaSeitz where you make such a denial. So Rabbeinu Tam says that prior to Shvat HaSeitz, there was this other Shvat Rabbanan, a very early Shvat Rabbanan, which is a Shvat HaShomrim in cases where you claim Nansu. Where you claim that the animal died or was taken away in an unforeseen circumstance, there was a Shvat Rabbanan. And that's what he claims that the Shvuah that we're speaking about on the Amud Bet here, as well as in Baba Batra, is a Shvat Rabbanan. And therefore the Tosfot says that the Pshat of Rashi, as well as the Riva, fits much better into our Gemara here, where on the second half of the Daf, there is a Shvat HaShomrim, independent of there being a Modeh B'Miksat. And again, both to the Riva and Rashi, that is a possibility that you can have a Shvat HaShomrim, even in a case of Kofer Bakol, because Shvat HaShomrim does not require a Modeh B'Miksat, and that presents a very big difficulty in the position of the Rabbeinu Tam. Okay, now the Gemara continues, and says, V'zeh Omer Shula, V'zeh Omer Shchura. This one says it's borrowed, and this one says it was rented. Then the renter has to take a shvua that the rented one died. Why is that the case over here? Now, first of all, you have both of them making definitive claims, and they're both making definitive claims. One saying a claim that he's patur, and the other one saying that a claim that he is chayav. And yet we force the shoel to take a shvua. What is obligating the shoel to take a shvua over here? It says, "Mashita'ano lo hodu lo, mashodu lo lo ta'ano." So one way to read this is simply that this is a case of modeh b'miksat, and the problem is that there is no modeh b'miksat over here because the claim is about one item, and the denial is about a different item. Well, he's making a claim that it was rented; the other one's saying no, it was borrowed. Or he's saying it's borrowed, and he's saying, no, it was rented. Those types of claims are not modeh b'miksat. Because the truth is, it's a different claim entirely. It's not that I'm saying to you, yeah, I agree to part of your claim. No, I deny your claim. I say that the whole transaction, the whole relationship was completely different. So the explanation is either that, over here, one of them is talking about Sheila, and one of them is talking about Skirut. And since the two have nothing to do with each other, the ta'ana, the claim and the defense have nothing to do with each other, and it's not modeh b'miksat. Or, even if you want to say that Sheila and Schirut are considered to be the same topic, there's a denial that involves different animals. One animal was lent and one animal was rented. And therefore the response to the claim is a defense that doesn't have anything to do with the animal that the person is making the claim about. And therefore you do not have modeh b'miksat over here. And therefore, as Rashi says over here, "Da'afagav du'ukimne be'kofer u'modeh ani mile l'Rav Nachman." Even though we explained our Mishnah now that the Mishnah is talking about a case of kofer u'modeh for Rav Nachman, because that's the only way you can have a case of chiyuv according to Rav Nachman, our Mishnah, "Mi'u matnitin Rav Huna l'Rav Yehuda k'diktani." But for Rav Yehuda and Rav Huna, who don't need the esek shvua b'neihem, and they explain our Mishnah simply as bari b'shema, bari odif, v'ma yishava. Why in a case where they both have a bari claim do we force them to take a shvuah? Hare ein kan hoda'a b'miktzat. There's nothing that obligates him in a shvuah over here. What is obligating this individual to take a shvuah? So Amar Ula, ayidei gilgul. The answer is that he is chayav a shvuat ha-shomrim. What is that? Damalei ishtabali ezu mihat dikedarka meita. Okay, you think that it was the rented one that died? I want a shvuah from you that it died a natural death and that you were not a posheya. That's what we call shvuat ha-shomrim, and you're allowed to demand that of a shomer. Umigo de mishtaba de kedarka meita, mishtaba nami de schura meita. And now that he's already taking a shvuah that it died a natural death, we'll force him also to take a shvuah that it was the rented one that died and not the borrowed one that died. So that's ayidei gigul shvuah. This answer of the Gemara is what prompts the whole problem in the Mishnah for all the Rishonim that we discussed before. The Shvat HaShomrim should be true in all the cases of the Mishnah. So why aren't all the cases of our Mishnah chayav shvua al yedei gilgul shvua? That's what we said at the beginning of this shir and in yesterday's daf as to why the Rishonim are explaining our Mishnah as being cases where there is no gilgul shvua or there is no shvata shomrim. And again, we said the answer that the Baal Tosfot give is that the individual believes, the other party, that meta kedarka, that it died naturally, or there were edim to that fact, and therefore there's no need for shvata shomrim. But that presents a serious problem over here, because here the Gemara says there is a shvata shomrim, at least in that case, where they both are making definitive claims. So Tosfot answers that that's exactly why he doesn't believe him in this case. In the other case, where either the claimant is making a maybe claim, or the defendant is making a maybe claim, the other party believes him that he died meta kedarka, either because he doesn't know enough information to say otherwise, or because the other party is saying, I don't know. And maybe he really doesn't know, but you believe him with regards to the fact that it died naturally. You just don't know which of the animals died or which time period it was. Over here, where he knows the other guy is lying, because he's saying definitively that it was the borrowed one that died. The other guy is countering him and saying, no, I know for sure it was the rented one that died. So now the claimant says, why would I believe him with regards to Meta Kedarka when I think he's lying about which animal died? Once he thinks that he's lying, he's going to force him to take a shvua about Meta Kedarka. And that's how the Baal Tosafot explained the Mishnah as being a case where in all cases he doesn't have to take shvua to Shomrim, with the exception of this case. This case is exceptional because over here he's denying the claim of the claimant outright. He's saying, you say that it was the borrowed one, I say it was the rented one. The fact that he is contradicting him head on, then that person says, I don't believe him anymore. Since I don't believe him, I want him to take a shvua about Meta Kedarka. Once he does that, he can use Gilgul Shvua, and therefore demand of him that he takes a shvua to the effect that it was the Tzkura and not the Sheula. And that's the nature of the shvua in our Mishnah. Again, that's for Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda. For Rav Nachman, again, the case here will be a case of Modeh B'Mitzah, because you have an extra animal in the situation, and that extra animal is what's going to generate the shvua, or the necessity for a shvua over here, because you have a Modeh B'Mitzah that is generating the shvua, and the Gilgul Shvua is because of the Modeh B'Mitzah. So now the Gemara continues and says, Zeh Omer Eini Yodea, V'Zeh Omer Eini Yodea. Each party says, I don't know. Then we said, Chokim, they split it. Hamani, who's the author of our Mishnah? Sumchusi, it is Sumchus. Damar, Mamon, Mutal, B'Safek, Chokim. Mamon that is left in doubt is split. So that's what we noted before, that our Mishnah clearly follows the position of Sumchus. What the Baal Tosafot, as we noted before, point out is that even according to Sumchus, our Mishnah is not just a regular case of Sumchus, and therefore it might be that the Sumchus agrees to certain circumstances of Motzi Mechavero Labaraya, but it's Leka Drarura de Mamona, where there isn't either a claim that exists or a safek that exists independent of the claims, according to Rashi, that there's no Chisaron Kesef, and therefore even Sumchus in our Mishnah might agree that certain circumstances involve a Motzi Mechavero Labaraya. Bayi Rabbi Abba Bar Mamel. Rabbi Abba Bar Mamel poses the following question. Sheila b'balim, if he borrowed it from the balim, sachra shelo b'balim. Then he rented it out without the balim being present, mahu. So according to Rashi, these were sequential events. He first borrowed the animal from the individual, and he also at the same time borrowed the owner's services. And so that's what we call sheila b'balim. And he would be put to work. Later on, the time period of borrowing expired, and then he continues to rent the animal. He says, let me rent it now. But at the time of the rental, the owner is no longer engaged in melacha with him. So now the Gemara wants to know, mi amrinan, she'ela l'chuda kaima, uskhirut l'chuda kaima. These are two completely independent transactions, and therefore she'ela bibalim does not influence the schira shelo bibalim. Or dilma, on the other hand, schirut b'sheila mishach shaychi. That schirut is really, in a sense, a continuation of the borrowing. Da mechayev b'gneva v'aveda. That is because schirut is really a subset of she'ila. She'ila is chayav in everything. Chutz mi meita machmat milacha. A socher is also chayav in gneva v'aveda, but he's patur ba'onsin. But the fact that he's chayav in Gnei Ba'aveda is really a continuation of the Sheila, that he was already chayav in Gnei Ba'aveda. He continues to be chayav in Gnei Ba'aveda. And so what we would then say is that the Schirut is really just an extension of the original Sheila, but it's an extension of a modified extension of the Sheila. And therefore, in that instance, it would be considered to be Schirut Bebalim. That's the way that Rashi explains it. The Rif and some of the other Rishonim disagree with Rashi and suggest that the case here is not where it was sequential, where he borrowed it and then at the end of the borrowing period he rents it, but rather up front they came to that agreement. Up front he tells him, I'm going to borrow it for such and much time, and then I'm going to rent it from you afterwards. And then the Balim are engaged with work with him at the time. Do we consider it that when the transition happens between the Sheila to the Schirut, that that's considered to be a new transaction, a new start of a transaction, and the Balim are not working for him at that time, therefore it's Schirut below Balim? Or do we say, since the transactions were initiated in the beginning, when the Balim were providing their services to this individual, it's considered to be Sheila and Schirut with Balim, because the Schirut is an extension or a continuation of the Sheila in a modified fashion? So that's the question. The Gemara says, Im Timso Lomar. If you want to say, Schira B'Sheila Meshach Shaychi, so again, this is the Shita of the Rambam, when the Gemara goes, Im Timso Lomar, or concludes something, that means the Halacha is that way, and now we're going to present a different Safek. So here the Halacha is that Schirut is considered to be an extension or continuation of Sheila, and therefore the rental will also be considered to be with the Balim. Sachra B'Balim Sha'ala B'Shablo B'Balim Ma'u. What happens if the transaction was in reverse? That upfront he rented it, and when the rental period terminated, according to Rashi, he then borrowed it, or according to the Rif, this was the agreement upfront, he would rent it for this duration, and then he would borrow it for the subsequent duration. Sheila b'schirut vaday lo shaycha. Do we say that Sheila is not relevant to schirut? Because Sheila has obligations that do not exist within schirut, and therefore you can't say that Sheila borrowing is a modified continuation of schirut. Odilma came in the shaycha b'mitzat, come on the shaycha b'kula dami. Or maybe you say over here that since it's relevant in part, it's relevant in whole. Which means that by Sheila, you are chayav for gneva v'aveda, but you're also chayav for onsin. By schirut, you're chayav for gneva v'aveda, you are not chayav for onsin. So if you did the schirut up front, and then you continue with Sheila, we could argue that at least with regards to Gneva Vaveda, the Sheila is a continuum of the Schirut, the rental up front. Because then you were Chayav in Gneva Vaveda, and now you're also Chayav in Gneva Vaveda. The additional Chiyuv of Onsin is a modification. Yes, that's not relevant by Schirut, but still, since a portion of it is relevant by Schirut, we look at the whole as being a continuation of the Schirut. And now the Gemara continues and says, Im Tim Solomar, Lo amrinan. We do not say, came in the Shaykh b'mitzat, come on the Shaykh b'kula domi. That is the girsa of Rashi. Rashi over here notes that there was an alternative girsa, and the alternative girsa was, im timtza lomar amrinan, that we do say, came in the Shaykh b'mitzat, come on the Shaykh b'kula domi. And then the Gemara goes on to ask the questions based on that premise. Rashi says that he does not like that girsa, he rejects that girsa, because he says, "Any odeh l'amido, I don't know how to explain the subsequent Gemara or the subsequent questions. Once you've determined that mitzvah is enough to generate a continuum, or to say that Sheila is a continuum of Schirut, because Rashi says once you say that, then the upcoming questions, the answers would be obvious, and therefore it can't be that the Gemara is concluded that way. It must be the Gemara concluded the opposite, and therefore Rashi reads the Gemara in the following manner." Since you're not relevant in the whole to that item, therefore you're not relevant at all. So then if he borrowed it, and then he rented it without the balim, and then he borrowed it again, mahu. What is the din? Does the she'ila go back to its original state? Maybe the rental in between causes a hefsek. So the question is that, here according to Rashi in a sequential manner, he first of all borrowed it, then at the termination of the borrowing he rented it, and then at the termination of the renting it he borrowed it. Only the original borrowing was together with the Balim, meaning the Balim were doing some sort of service for him. So that original Sheila was Bivalim. Do we apply then the Balim to the latter Sheila that is done at the end? Do we say that it's all considered to be a continuum, and therefore the latter Sheila can match up with the original Sheila? Or do we say that since the Schirut in the middle has no relevance, had you stopped there, there would not be Schirut Bibalim, therefore the subsequent Sheila is also Shelo Bibalim? That's the question. Sachra Bibalim, or the opposite. If he rented it with the Balim, Vishala, Vichazar Vishachra, Mahu. If he then borrowed it and then rented it again, what's the din? Mi'amir and Achela Schirut the Duchta. Do we say that Schirut continues its original state? Odelma Ifsikala Sheila Beni Ubeni. Maybe the Sheila is a half-stake in between. So even though in the previous scenario we had said that Sheila to Schirut is considered to be a continuum, then you go Sheila to Schirut, can you then bump from the Schirut back up to Sheila since it derived from Sheila originally? That's the question. But now the question is even more problematic because here you started out with Schirut, then went to Sheila, then went back to Schirut. And we already determined that you cannot go from Schirut to Sheila. That's not considered to be a continuum. So then, in the case where it goes back to Schirut, do we look at the latter Schirut as being connected to the original Schirut? Or do we look at the Sheila as being a hefsek in between? Odelma Yifsekele Sheila Beni Ubeni? Gemara leaves it as teku, as an unresolved issue. So that is the way that Rashi reads it. The Balei and Tosafot object to Rashi's explanation here, basically because they don't think the Girsa needs to be changed. Number one, he says that Rashi obviously had an alternate Girsa and changed it. Number two is, I can make sense or more sense out of the Girsa that was there originally. Because he says, according to Rashi, the question here seems obvious what the answer is. The question is, well, can you pass it from one to the other? The Gemara just concluded that Sheila is not considered to be a continuum of Schirut. If that's the case, then all these cases, the answer should be no. Because you can't have Schirut pass something to Sheila. And in all these cases, that's what happens. Again, I explained it according to Rashi, yeah, you could think that way. Balei Tosafot thinks that by definition, that would make all these cases easy to explain and say no. And therefore, he explains it according to the original Girsa, which is that Imtim Solomar, if you conclude Amrinon, we do say that moving from Schirut to Sheila is still considered to be a continuum, since the Sheila is picking up a portion of that which was true by the Schirut, and therefore it's considered to be a continuum. Then the following questions I present to you, and the questions are, can you move the Balim in two steps? Which is, yes, I can get the Balim from the first Schirut to Sheila, or from the first Sheila to Schirut, because they are juxtaposed to each other. Therefore, I can move from a scenario in which the Balim were there to a scenario where the Balim weren't there, but consider that to be a continuum. The problem is now in a third step, do I look at the third step as being simply a derivative of the second step? And the second step didn't really have Balim. It only had Balim because of the first step, and therefore can't pass it to the third step. Or do I say that the third step is really considered to be a continuum of the first step? Since the second step continues the first step, also when the third step comes along, it also continues the first step, and it's all considered to be Bibalim. And that would be the question of the Gemara according to the Balei Tosafot. Even though we know you can pass from Sheila to Schirut, or Schirut to Sheila, question is, can you also do that for a third generation? Can you pass it on to a third step, even though now you're not connected directly to something that happened Bibalim? That's what the Gemara leaves, or results in a teku. All right, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the bottom of Tzadichet Amud Bet.